Scott. It's a bird. It's a plane. It's Superman.
This is Dan Jurgens.
This is Jason J. Lewis, the voice of Superman on Justice League Action.
This is Mark Waid, writer of Superman Birthright.
And you're listening to The Krypton Report.
The Krypton Report podcast is dedicated to all things Superman, Supergirl, and the planet Krypton. We discuss movies, TV, game, comics, and all things DC. So join me, Tyler, with my co-host James and Jania. Welcome to the Krypton Report. It is I, your host, Tyler, the Superman of Blue, the man of tomorrow. And today I have a special guest. This man I got here is very knowledgeable about the one thing that I often say about the super fandom that I know very little about. I've been trying to get this legendary man on the show for a while, but you know, life. So today I'd like to welcome the great Mr. Sam Rizzio to the podcast. Welcome, Sam.
Thanks, Ty. How are you doing?
Is it Ty or Tyler? Either. I got three first names, and the fact that I have three first names and I have nicknames off those names, I just go with whatever. As long as you get one of the names right, I go with it.
Okay,
I had a teacher in high school who I had for 4 years because I had him for health, PE, and then like another class he taught, and he still got my name in the wrong order. I'm like, I've been your student for 4 years, man. But whatever. Sam, it's great to have you on the show. You know, we've tried before, but you know, life happens. And then, you know, where I started my monthly, where I'm trying to like do these little segments on the different actors who've portrayed, Kryptonians, as I put it, you know, you reached out like, hey, I liked your little segment on John Newton. And I'd like to talk a little bit, you know, about Gerard, because spoilers, people, Sam knows Gerard. And I was like, yeah, that would be great, you know, because you are the host of the Superboy Legacy podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Superboy, the TV series, that was my gateway, or should I say my gateway drug into the Superman world. It's no secret if you've listened to Superboy, the Legacy, or just have been on my Instagram or any of my social media platforms, how much I love this series. It was being a six-year-old and seeing the series for the first time in the summer of 89 was something like – it looked like it just – the comic books came to life. Mm-hmm. And the first episode I ever saw was the Bizarro, the Thing of Steel episode, which was amazing. Like to see Bizarro come to life, to see Gerard's Superboy, which as a six-year-old, like it's Superman. Like yeah. Was just – and the action, the story was – fantastic. And as a kid, you just want to see Superman do super things, and that show did it in spades.
I try to, like, when I was watching the show and everything, and like I was trying to, you know, tell my kids, like, technically this is Superboy, and they're like, that's not Superboy. I'm like, it's tricky, this is Superman when he's younger and he went by Superboy. And my kid's like, what? I'm like, hold on. You know what's crazy for me is I remember the show, but what I remember is I remember the intro. And the most vivid part of the intro was the missile being shot at the very obvious now dummy, you know, yes. Exploding.
Yeah, yeah.
And I swore for the longest time, I'd say, like, there was a Superboy show. And like, no, you're thinking of Superman, because it was on cable, and it was on like the same channel at my grandparents' house that had Superman 4, I think, play every day. And I'm like, no, I remember this. And it just seemed like before the internet, where everyone had access, you know, people like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. Are you thinking about Lois and Clark? No, there was Superboy. And then, of course, in 2006, when Superman Returns came out, I'm at Walmart late at night, and then there's that big display, and there sits season one of Superboy. And I was like, I knew it. I was like, there, I'm buying this. finally, proof.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny being here in Chicago and going to a number of conventions over the years as a kid, and my father taking me to different comic book shops as a kid and buying up all the 1950s and 60s and 70s Silver Age Superboy comics. Like, that just fed my fandom for the show. And to go to comic shops and go to conventions and ask vendors and other collectors, hey, do you have any Superboy stuff? And like what you said, Ty, people just looking at you like, there is no Superboy series. What are you talking about? Like, no, there's 100 episodes that were on television that, like, there was a Superboy series. You got to be kidding me. And then people are going like, you mean Lois and Clark. You mean Smallville. Mm-hmm. Or you mean, like, The Adventures of Superman. No, I mean Superboy, the TV series, which was – and it was just so funny. And there was one vendor from California, Hollywood Book and Posters, that just fed my appetite because they had all these 8x10s from the Viacom press kits. And they had transparencies. And I can remember every time they come to town just putting an order in and just buying like every single thing that they had and then multiples of things. So it was just like, oh, he's a great customer. We got to bring more. So yeah, it was just you either caught the show in its initial run or you didn't. And it has such a cult following. And like in recent years, like with DC Universe app that just, you know, it's no longer there anymore. But one of the first things that they put on the service was The Adventures of Superboy.
Which I loved.
Yeah, thank you, Mike Carlin, because he's like, hey, Sam, we're going to put it on there. I was like, great. Oh, go ahead.
And I was going to say, like, I've been a big advocate. Like, I'll say to people, like, I miss DC Universe. And they're like, well, it's on HBO Max. I'm like, no, it's not. Because what I loved about DC Universe is because they had Superboy, The Adventures of Superman, the old Shazam series, these things that were out that we can't get our hands on that really helped you dig into this background. And I'm like, I'm still like, please put these on DC or on HBO now, because I was in the middle of season two of Superboy because I was watching The Adventures of Superman. I was watching Superboy, like all the stuff that I had missed out on because it was hard to track. It was hard to find. Yeah. And then it went away and I'm like, well, yeah. Crap.
Well, I think DC Universe was fantastic. And like you said, they utilized their back catalog of their heroes like Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, even Shazam. Mm-hmm. Like they did a beautiful restoration for the 1970s Shazam series. And I was like, wow, if they could do this with Shazam, they could do this with the Kirk Allen serials. They could do it with the George Reeves. That needs a total restoration. Come on, Warners. Like, yeah. Superboy, it'd be a nice to do an HD transfer. They have the 35mm sitting there in the vault collecting dust. Like, I mean, there's so much you can do with the super properties that you could see a nice return if you're Warner Brothers. But again, unless they have the idea, it's not going to happen.
Right. You know? And I mean, by putting it out there on their streamer, it lets people know it exists. I mean, for example, my friend Zach Moore does a podcast, a retroactive podcast of Always Hold On to Smallville. And I met him online back when he started in season one. When Smallville came to Hulu, instantly it found a new fandom that he started having more people wanting to be on the podcast and were talking about it. And the podcast kind of grew because people could find the show. And if they put Superboy on HBO Max, there would be people who would find it and get this nice little window into part of their super fandom that they don't have. They've lost touch with because – or they never knew it existed because it is almost like this kept secret.
Right. It's funny because a couple years ago, you know Tracy Roberts, who played Darla, Lex Luthor's Miss Tessmacher on Superboy. She was invited to the Superman celebration, and I remember getting a message from her saying, Sam, I'm so nervous going. I don't think anybody's going to remember me. So we go. You know, I did some photos and stuff for her table. We get there. The line wrapped around the building. That was fantastic. She looked at me. She's like, wow. She didn't stop signing from the minute she sat down to the minute she left, and I think it was like a three-hour signing each day. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. But the best thing about that weekend was there was a screening of two episodes that were an hour. I mean, Superboy runs about 22 minutes each episode. So we posted two episodes together. We edited two episodes together. the Road to Hell episodes.
Mm.
And we did a screening in Artist Alley, and it sold out. So many people were in there. She got in her Darla, her white Darla costume, and did a skit with Josh Boltinghouse, the official Superman of Metropolis. So they did the whole skit, a little skit from Roads Not Taken, which, in my opinion, two of the best episodes of Superman on film that you'll ever see. It was the first multiverse concept on film.
Mm.
So they did the skit. Everybody stood up at the end of it and cheered at the end of the screening. And we're like, oh, my God, I've never seen this. This looks amazing. This is like the Christopher Reeve films all over again. Like, it's just really, really well done.
There is a charm to the series.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like I said, it's this window into this excitement, because it's this part of the super fandom that I haven't got to fully explore. And there's stories and characters and things that come to life. And the cast is great. When they changed over cast, it still was a very fun group of people to watch and be part of.
Well, it's funny because talking with Stacy and talking with most of the cast from that first season, like Jim Calvert, Michael Mano, who played Leo, Lex's best friend, the one thing that I've taken away from everybody from the cast is how much they loved doing the show and how much love and care and sweat and tears they put into doing all 100 episodes, or doing that first season if you're John Newton or Jim Calvert. They loved being part of the Superman legacy. And even to this day, when I talk to them, like, they have no problem sitting down and talking about it, because they love the character and they loved what they contributed to the series. But yeah, I mean, it's that first season. It's really rough. It's funny when you said, Ty, like, finding the season one box set in 2006, getting that box set was so hard with Warner Brothers. Trying to get the series out was like a nightmare, because it was like the 1966 Batman series with Adam West. You never thought you were going to see it, because there were so many people that had their hands in the copyright or the production of the series. They wanted their slice of the pie, so we thought we were never going to see it. You had Carthage Productions and Viacom own a piece of Superboy. You had DC and Warner Brothers, and then you had Ilya Salkin's company own part of it. So the series never was in syndication, because Warner Brothers and DC put a lien against the series after the show ended, because they wanted to start their own Superman production. They saw the returns of Superboy and it being in the top 10 syndication, and they were approving the scripts from the show. And they were like, you know what? We want to do our own Superman show. We're seeing how successful Superboy is on television, next to the Star Trek The Next Generation and My Secret Identity at the time. They're like, we want to do our own. We've given you 4 years of Superboy. We're going to develop our own Superman show. So, yeah, I mean, and Superboy just kept getting better and better and better with each passing season. That first season, it was really tough. I mean, you had the production team from the Superman films with Chris Reeve come to television, and you could see in those first 13 just how tough it was, because they didn't know how to build up to a commercial break. They didn't know how to do a teaser of an episode. Like, I mean, television for Ilya and his team was something completely new.
Yeah. They were finding their footing. And like you know, the show in the second season, for those who don't know, like, had a kind of a soft reboot. It went from being, what, 40-some minutes to 20-some minutes. Some cast changes, mostly all the cast, but yeah, Stacy.
Three-fourths of the cast. They should have called the series, it's funny, The Adventures of Lana Lang, because she was the only consistent one through all four seasons. She was the only cast member that wasn't replaced. So, yeah. But it's, I think, other than Batwoman, which just happened recently, where they recast the lead role, I think this is the only other time in television history where they recast like in the middle of a run, like in a complete casting overhaul, which was insane. And I think there was just in TV Guide, there was an article on TV Guide that mentioned Superboy and Batwoman together, which was hilarious. I was like, wow, they really did a deep dive.
Like, yeah, wow. I mean, I remember that was kind of when they announced that Batwoman was going to be recast. And, you know, there was the debate before they announced it was going to be a new character, you know, about how who they could get to replace or whatever. That's like Superboy came up in conversations.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, see, this has happened before, and it's that thing that people forget happened. And the one thing that I've kind of been really, like, I don't want to say upset, but is the lack with everything that's happened with, you know, Lois and Clark and onward, there's always that paying tribute to legacy of Superman.
Right. Right.
But nobody's, like, paid legacy to Superboy. You know, like, for example, I think Gerard would have been a perfect Jor-El. I think Stacy and Gerard would have been perfect for Jor-El and Lara for the current Superman and Lois show. You know?
I agree.
Considering they're not – they didn't use Jor-El that much, I just thought that would be a great – you know, they didn't get in Crisis. I was like, could you imagine that kind of a payoff to just have him – you know, as Jor-El, I'm like, why not? Like, why hasn't someone been like, you know what? Let's get someone from Superboy to appear here. Because, I mean, think about Lois Lane has almost the tradition of having a previous Lois Lane represent her mom.
Yeah. Yeah. Erica Durance. Yeah. Yeah. Terry Hatcher was on Smallville. Yeah.
And what do you call it? Noelle Neal was Lois Lane's mom in Superman the movie.
Mm-hmm. And she was in Superman Returns as Gertrude. Yeah.
Yep.
Margo was in Smallville too. So yeah.
So we've had, you know, all of these people play, you know, Dean Cain was in Supergirl and Smallville.
Right.
You know, Terry Hatcher was in Supergirl also. Mark McClure was in Smallville. Helen Slater was in Supergirl and Smallville. Mark Kerr was even in Justice League. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
You know, there's all this legacy of having people appear in other super-based projects. We could go on and on. But nobody has really been like, hey, other than Sherman Howard voiced in the Justice League animated series. Like, it's not coming to me right now. But he did provide some vocal work.
Yeah, I mean, he's been consistently in DC animation. He was in Batman Beyond as David Prowse, or David Powers.
Yeah.
The character that was trying to take over Bruce's empire.
Derek Powers.
Yeah, he was in that entire first season as the radioactive, or he was infected with those, gamma rays or something, whatever.
Light.
Yes, yeah. But, like, he's been consistently in DC properties, DC animated properties. It's funny. I'm trying to think who else. Gilbert Gottfried, who was on Superboy as Knick-Knack, voiced Mixis Piddalick in Superman the Animated Series. So, like, there's been some influences of getting some actors from Superboy, but it's not – I don't think it's on the forefront of, like – the production teams from Superman the Animated Series minds that, oh, you know what? These guys did Superboy. I could be wrong, but, like, I don't think, like, I don't think they know. I think they just see, like, oh, you know what? He's got a really unique voice. Let's bring him on. So.
And, I mean, I'm still fingers crossed, you know, praying that if they do, because one thing, spoilers for Superman Lois Season 1, but there's a lot of allusion to Lara. And we don't actually get to see Lara in Season 1. You know, I would love to see someone reach out to Stacy to be Lara. Like, I would lose my mind just because it's kind of that awesome deep dive of, like, oh, my gosh.
She is in such perfect shape. I was just with her and Alon Mitchell-Smith this past summer at the Superman Celebration, which was my first convention in over 2 years because of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's for most people. But, you know, being up on stage with them, I think that was one question I posed to Alana and Stacy. Would you guys be interested in coming back to a Superman related property like Superman and Lois. And Stacy immediately said yes. She would love to come back. And it's not like she hasn't been trying. And Gerard's the same way. I kind of keep them apprised of what's going on in the Superman world, which is pretty funny. I think the Lara thing would be interesting, but she makes such a great villain and she has such fun, like on Days of Our Lives, you know, as a villain. So I would love to see her come back in a villain type of role, which would be really cool.
I mean, it would be easy to do, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. It's not like you say, like, she's still working. It's not like she's retired and bring her out of retirement or something. She's a working actress. So,
yeah, she's been consistently on television, on soaps, in prime time. She was on Heroes. And I think the very first episode, she was Parkman, who the police officer who had the telekinetic. He could read people's minds. And she was his boss that first season. And I was like, oh, my God, there's Stacy. Like, she would be – and she came across as very, like, villainous in Heroes. And I was like, oh, it'd be so cool if they beef up her role and trying to figure out, like, Parkman's, like, secret and all that stuff. Like, how do you know going into these crime scenes, how can you figure out, like, what's going on here and her trying to find out, like, how is he doing all this? That would have been so cool if they went in that direction, but they didn't. They used his partner, who was with him the entire time. But it would have been cool to see her, you know, in a role like that, a more villainous role. I asked her recently. I'm like, would you get back into DC, even if it's not Superman? Would you get back into doing something in the comic book sense? And it's funny. She said to me, I think at the Hollywood show right before The Flash. Season one started. She goes, it's funny you asked that, Sam. I just did a reading for Nora Allen's role for season one of The Flash. And like I got, like she said, she got in the room, she did the reading, they really liked her, and then they just wanted to go with somebody younger for the role. And I was like, oh my God, that would have been amazing. You back into the DC world as Nora Allen, that would have been fantastic. And it would have been a great deep dive. You know, oh, Stacy was in Superboy all these years ago, and like people could go back and find out more about her. But to get into The Flash, that would have been amazing to see her as Nora Allen. That would have been so cool.
That would have been cool.
Yeah.
That's really, I mean, so it's, you know, I was going to say, like, The Flash has done a great job of pulling out characters from The Flash TV series and actors who were, like, the mayor was, like, the cop, like, one of the beat cops in the old Flash series.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, we could go around and around, but, like, Superboy is just, I feel like, the one DC show that has not gotten
connection. They haven't really mined the Superman or the Superboy television series stars. And for one thing or another, I think one of the main reasons why they haven't done this, and this is just me putting two and two together, is that Superboy was not a Warner Brothers production. I think if Superboy was a Warner Brothers production, you would see more. You would have saw more marketing for the series back when the series was on. You would have saw the series in syndication on, like, MeTV or the series would have been utilized more in syndication and more people would have discovered it. I think it being a Viacom property and it being leased by Warner Brothers to Elia and his team at the time, I think, and it being the first Superman series since, what, The Adventures of Superman, I want to say, on television, I think his production team didn't know, and Viacom didn't know how to utilize the Superboy brand at the time. So I think that was a big thing. And them just trying to figure out television with the show, those first two seasons. Because, like, you go and look at season three and season four, and it's basically the X-Files with Superboy or Superman. That's what I would say. You know?
It's, you know, people are always like, oh, he's super, like, he's a man. Why is he a boy? And you're like, well, it's kind of that they couldn't use Superman to do it, so they used Superboy,
right?
To be able to produce their show. And but no, that's a really good point, a really good thought of why it didn't grow and why they kind of pushed it back and down. And it's sad because it is in this time where we're all discovering these properties and you have such a resurgence of these old shows and actors coming mm-hmm. back. The fact that this piece is not being respected or getting its chance to find its new audience and live on, and mm-hmm. It's just messed up.
Yeah.
To boil it down. Like,
I mean, yeah, it's messed up, but I think in the last 10-15 years, I just want to give a shout out to my buddy Matt Patterson at WB Archives. I think without Warner Brothers, that subdivision of Warner Brothers being created where they could just, hey, you know what? We're going to take a TV series that didn't do so well, market it through Warner Home Video, but the fans are clamoring to get the rest of the series. Like, let's put it through our Warner Archives division. We'll put just the episodes on there, the best looking episodes on DVD, and market it towards that fan community. And in recent years, WB Archives has grown because of that, and people love it. You could thank WB Archives for releasing the extended cuts of Superman the movie and Superman, the special edition that they just came out with a couple years back.
Yep. About the Supergirl, because that was something I didn't have in my collection. And if you could find a DVD copy of that, it was like ridiculously priced.
Yeah.
And then they put out the Blu-ray of mm-hmm. the one cut, and then there's a DVD of the other cut of Supergirl in the Warner Archives collection. You know, I bought that. I bought the 3-hour cut of Superman the movie. Mm-hmm. And so I totally am with you on that. Like, if they would release like a box set of Superboy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they did. It was, I think, the longest release between season one and season two in history. I think it was like 6 years. Superboy season one came out in 2006 in, I want to say, what, May of 2006?
That sounds about right, because that was the ramp up for Superman yeah. Returns.
And I remember them marketing it in the back of the Superman prequel, Superman Returns prequel comics. And it was like, here's the super legacy of Superman. And there's John Newton on the cover in one of the box sets. I think there was like 6 different box sets. There was Kirk Allen. There was Superboy season one. They were marketing that Lois and Clark was coming to DVD. Mm-hmm. And the George Reeves series was coming to DVD. So mm-hmm. they were marketing all those at the time. And I remember my friend at Superman homepage, shameless plug, sorry. But yeah,
that's what we do.
Yeah. But my buddy at who passed away a couple years back, my buddy Barry Fryman, messaged me and was like, Sam, I'm doing an interview with Ilya Sulkin. I'm like, you're kidding me. He's like, yeah, you know, in the course of the interview, he told me that season one of Superboy was coming out. I was like, really? And he sends me the interview, and I'm looking, and like Ilya says, like, oh, I'm sending everything to this. It was New Wave Entertainment that was producing all the extra features for season one. So Barry's like, you know what? I'm gonna give you Sam's phone number, Ilya. Call him. He has all these different ideas on how to market seasons 2, 3, and 4. And at the time, I think I had my website through Angel Fire. If anybody remembers angelfire.com, I think that was the first like website that I did it all by myself, like building that website through Angel Fire. And then it went to GeoCity, and then I bought a .com, which was Superboy homepage at the time. But like, it was funny to see like how all these people remembered the show, but they had no access to it
mm-hmm.
for years. And like, me and a bunch of other fans were tape trading old VHS tapes back and forth, you know, trying to get our all 100 episodes. So it was pretty funny. But when Barry told me that first season was coming out, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And it was funny because I was working retail at the time, and I'll never forget this. It was like around this time of year, like in January, and I get this phone call. Is this Sam Rizzo from Superboy homepage, blah, blah, blah. Please hold for Ilya Sulkin. And I was like, no way. No way.
Dude, what?
Why would Ilya Sulkin, the famous producer from the Superman films and Superboy and Supergirl, take an interest in what little old me here in Chicago is doing? So he comes on the phone and he goes, Sam? I go, yeah? He goes, this is Ilya Sulkin in his, you know, accent. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I love what you're doing with Superboy, you know? And I'm like, okay, is this really an Ilya? So I kind of quizzed him. I was like, did you write Dracula, Young Dracula? Did you write, like, Johnny Casanova? And he started telling me stories about, like, producing Superboy those first two seasons. And I was like, yep, it's Ilya. So for like 15, 16 years, we were friends and talking about the show. I remember doing a six-hour interview on my flip phone, trying to figure out how to record it. I wish I had that interview now to put on my podcast, but like, I think I spent like 6 hours on the phone with him. My phone bill was outrageous at the end of the month.
Back when you had to pay for minutes, people.
Oh, God. And you had to pay to record it, too, because I was paying the service to record it. And I was like, oh, my God. And I said to Ilya at the end of the conversation, I'm like, you should write a book. Like, yeah. It was so funny. But, you know, and then it was like a great friendship for a long time. And he would open his Rolodex to me and say, Sam, who do you want to talk to from the show? I go, what? And I was like, well, how about John? How about Gerard? How about Stacy? And he's like, here's their number. I'm going to call them and you talk to them. I remember geeking out. And when we have Gerard on the Superboy Legacy podcast, I'm going to ask him about this because it was so funny. My energy, and he'll tell you this, and like I was going to actually invite him on the show today just to talk with us. But he's busy today.
I just realized it just went huge. Like, if you can't see, like, I was
going to have him call into, like, to my mixer, because I have my cell phone linked to the mixer, and just bring him in. And, like, it would have been so funny. But
I would have been super pumped. Like, I've been like, right. Oh my gosh. Like, I would have been, like, yeah.
But I remember talking to him for the first time, and I don't really geek out when I talk to anybody, but because he was my Superman growing up, and, it, you know, to see him in that suit at 6 years old, it was like, wow, that's Superman or that's Superboy. Wow. And like to talk to him on the phone the first time was kind of intimidating. I was like, oh, my God. Like it would be like for you if it was William Shatner who was your hero or Adam West and like it or meeting Christopher Reeve if he was still alive. Like it's like, oh, my God, like this is my hero. Like and I just remember talking to him the first time and going, oh, my God, oh, my God. Like, I was going, like, a mile a minute. Like, that's the only time I've really geeked out, like, when I've talked to any celebrity. And it was so funny. And he's – at the end of the phone call, I just remember Gerard going, Sam, I love your energy. That was it.
I mean, you're like
– yeah.
The hardest thing for me is, like – because I don't want to say, like, I geek out or whatever. It's like I want to just talk to them as a person. But then it's like, I want to talk to them, but like, I want to like, hey, I appreciate your art, your work.
Right.
You know, I'd like to talk to you, but sometimes you're like, I don't want to be too crazy. I don't want to be too in their face or.
Yeah.
You know, have so much time. It's like, you know, when I met Dean Cain at a convention, then we got to chit chat. Like it was really cool because I have this picture. I'll take a picture of it. And I'll send it to you. It's a behind the scenes because I asked Dean about it. It's like a behind the scenes test photo. And I found this poster somewhere. I think it was like a thrift store or something. And he was like, I remember, you know, we were setting up to do this. And it was a really nice conversation, you know. And I'm like, I'm talking to, you know, Superman here. And trying not to, you know, you're trying to just like – you're trying to figure out how to just talk to them and not be like, okay, I have to hurry because we're at a convention. you know, and it's just like I don't – it's like I want to just talk and not – be like,
trying to be cool about it. Yeah, exactly.
Just be like, hey, I just want to talk to you as a person. I appreciate what you did. And sometimes you're like, you don't know what to say because like you have one question or one thing to say. Like, what do you do? And you're like, without sounding like every other person that walks by. So
yeah, I mean, I think over the years, that was the one I could think that is the one and only time where I was like intimidated. Like everybody else, like Alon Mitchell Smith, John Hames Newton, Jimmy Calvert, especially Michael Mano. I love Michael. I love talking to Michael, who played Leo on the show. I talk to him almost every week or every other week if we don't chat on the phone. And he is just so much fun. He is so humble. He's so down to earth. I think this past summer, I just sent some stuff to Robert Levine, who played Mr. Jackson. He's 91 this year.
Wow.
And I talked to him this past summer because he was like, Sam? I go, yeah. He's like, how do you remember the show? I was like, well, I was like 6-7 years old. It was my first Superman series. Like, it was my first Superman anything. And he's like, you were the perfect age for it.
Yes.
And he's like, I love doing that show. I love playing Mr. Jackson, which was – he was kind of like a Perry White figure. He was the head of the Bureau of Extra Normal Matters, that which Supergirl ripped off with the DEO. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Supergirl did a deep dive into taking some stuff from Superboy with the Bureau of what? Extra Department Normal Affairs Extra or something like that. So, yeah.
I will say – when you and I had talked before, you told me about how it changed to that in the later seasons. I did jump ahead before DC Universe disappeared and watched a couple episodes of the latter seasons just so I like have a feeling of it before they disappeared. And I thought that was kind of cool. Like you have this really interesting story that, I mean, like you said, Supergirl kind of ripped it off, but it was Clark working there as well. Like it wasn't just Superman or Superboy.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Right.
Like, it was Clark that was working there.
And I think those, the best thing about those two, those latter seasons 3 and 4, was that you got to see Gerard's Clark Kent come into his own. He wasn't really as bumbly as he was in the second season, as more, he was more like the Christopher Reeve Clark Kent in season 2, which was fine. And that's what Ilya and his production team wanted. But when Julia Pistor, who took over for Ilya the last two seasons, they changed the title of the show from Superboy to The Adventures of Superboy. And talking with her, I posed the question, why did you guys change the name of the series from Superboy to The Adventures of Superboy? She was like, it was just to open the world more, to be able to tell more stories. And it just sounded better, The Adventures of Superboy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she said, like, that was her first gig in film and television. She has gone on to have a great career working for Nickelodeon. She now working at Netflix. And, like, I texted her, and she's like, she said to me, she's like, Sam, those two seasons being on that show, that was the most fun I've ever had working on a property and working on a Superman show. And she loved it, and I'm hoping to have her on the podcast soon to talk about it. So
that'd be cool to hear.
Yeah. But it's amazing having this, having a podcast and having a website and, you know, keeping this show going in a sense, so people like yourself and other Superman fans can discover the show for the first time or rediscover it. And it's just gratifying when you have the cast and have other fans come up to you and go, Sam, this is amazing. This is really, really cool stuff, and I never knew it existed. So, yeah.
I think what's neat is, like, what you said was this was your first super experience. You know, like, you experienced Superboy before you saw – from what you said, the Reeve films, like, you saw Superboy.
I didn't – it's funny because I didn't see the Christopher Reeve films till much later. I want to say, like, in the early or mid-90s, I didn't see Superman – for a long time. I didn't know. I think I watched Supergirl with Helen Slater before I watched the Christopher Reeve films, which is funny. And I didn't even know about John Hames Newton as Superboy that first season until 1995, when the show was completely over and Fox 32 here in Chicago, I think it was like Saturday and Sundays because they had nothing else to play, played all 100 episodes of The Adventures of Superboy. And the first episode I saw with John Newton as Superboy was Kryptonite Kills, which was the first introduction of Kryptonite on the series. And I was like, I remember being watching television on Fox, because like Fox was amazing back in the early 90s. You had Power Rangers. You had I mean, what else was on Fox? You had the X-Files, which my aunt got me in, and I was like, oh my God. It was such a – Fox was such a great network back in the day.
It was. I mean, it had – and this is a whole side tangent, but I'll say Cartoon Network killed Saturday morning cartoons.
Right.
And it killed Toy Stores. I have a whole tangent about that. But Fox Kids, you know, had Batman X-Men. Series, X-Men, Spider-Man. X-Men.
Yeah.
And then yeah. Like Power Rangers, and then of course every Power Rangers ripoff. So VR Troopers, right. Beetleborgs.
Yeah, VR Troopers. Like you said, VR Troopers was on Fox too.
You know, that's the ones. And then Beast Wars was on Fox, but it was in the morning. So like they had all the great material. So the fact that they were showing Superboy, and I do want to point out for our listeners, Sam has said it several times. Superboy had 100 episodes. I want to say Lois and Clark only had like 87.
Yeah.
They didn't reach 100.
Right, they didn't. And it's funny because the Superboy production team knew they had to get to 100 episodes in order to be syndicated. And I think the last two episodes of the series, they went back and refilmed because the last episode was going to be Obituary for a Superhero, which was a clip show. And they filmed some news segments at the beginning of the episode and to bookend the episode, and they're like, we can't end the series this way. So they went back and they did a two-part episode called Rites of Passage, which, spoiler alert, Superboy becomes Superman at the end of the series, but they don't give him the Superman title, and like it killed me for years. It still kills me that Gerard has not been dubbed Sir Superman or Superman, you know. So yeah. It sucks, but come
on. Anytime I talk about actors who have played Superman, or like, I always bring up them because they are forgotten, you know, and left out because they're under the moniker of Superboy. But I'm like, you know what? It's still Clark Kent.
Oh, yeah.
And that's my thing. It's like, it's not like, you know, right now we have Josh Orpin over on Titans who's playing Connor Kent.
And he's fantastic. He is fantastic. Yeah.
And that's Superboy, as most people think of Superboy. So I wouldn't count that. Or Louis Grabel, who played Connor in Smallville for like an episode.
Right.
You know, that's a different Superboy. To me, John and Gerard still played Clark Kent becoming Superman, much just like Tom Welling played Clark Kent on his destination to become Superman. And they deserve the credit and to be recognized with the other actors that have played that character.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because whenever John – I know I was supposed to do a panel with John a couple years ago at the Superman celebration at the 40th. But I got sick during the course of the weekend, so I couldn't do the panel. And it's funny because John, whenever he talks about doing Superboy, he always felt – he hated the name Boy in Superboy. Because he had an older brother and he didn't want to be Boy.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to Ilya and the production team and was like, can we just call it Young Superman? Like, and they're like, no, we don't have the rights to Superman. So he hated the name Superboy. And like, but I mean, talking about the show, he loved it. He loved playing Superman or Superboy, sorry. But years later, a mutual friend of ours, an animator out in California, Rob Pratt, decided to put an animated short together on YouTube just to show what he can do. He's worked for Disney. He's done amazing stuff called Superman Classic. And he met John at a party of a family function. I forgot the story, but you should have Rob on, Ty.
Sure.
But he has some great stories. But like he met John at a party with his kids and asked him, hey, would you be interested in voicing Superman? So John got to voice Superman, and I think they're still up on YouTube. If you go on Rob Pratt's YouTube channel, you could watch Superman Classic, and he did a Bizarro Classic. And John voiced both Superman and Bizarro in both of those animated shorts. And John's wife, Jennifer Newton, voiced Lois Lane. And she's fantastic. They're both fantastic. But there's a third one. I don't know if Rob's ever going to release it, because Warner Brothers, he had meetings with Warners, about doing an animated Superman series, and they said, "We love what you're doing, but can you please stop?" We did, and I was Jimmy Olsen in one of them, which was pretty cool.
Nice.
I got to voice Jimmy Olsen, and it was Brainiac Classic. So he put his own stamp on Brainiac for one of them. But I got to see the animatics and stuff for it. It looked amazing. It was so cool. But I don't think we'll see it. Maybe we will. I don't know. but it was cool. I got to be in a Superman project, a little Superman project, and get to voice one of the great characters, Jimmy Olsen, you know, Superman's best friend. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, like John got to be Superman, which was pretty awesome. He got to voice Superman. I know just recently Gerard got an agent. We were talking about Superman, and I showed him the first 5 minutes of Superman and Lois, and it blew his mind. He loved it. He has reached out to the Superman and Lois production team about writing some episodes. And that's all I can say about that. But like,
that's
it's
awesome.
But Gerard, he loves the character. He's in better shape now than he was on the show. And he could still play Superman if you ask me. He's great.
So. I mean, like I said, I hate that they weren't represented in Crisis. I mean, I would love to just him to be represented somehow in the show. I'm going to throw this out there because, you know, Superman and Lois is dealing in a post-crisis world. And they never really did Hank Henshaw correctly. Could you imagine Gerard getting to play a military Hank Henshaw who then becomes Cyborg Superman?
Yeah, it'd be,
you know, or something like.
He loves, I mean, in the third season, they did the Roads Not Taken episodes, which, again, if you haven't seen it, it was different worlds on parallel worlds. It was very Sliders-like, you know, before Sliders. Superboy had all these great ideas, story threads woven through those four seasons that kind of blazed the way for where we are now on television with DC, adapting all these different versions of the characters. But Gerard got to play an evil Superboy called the Sovereign. And it was like Red Son before Red Son came out.
I think when
did Red Son come out? 93? Mark Waid wrote that in 93. And I think Roads Not Taken came out in 91.
That sounds right.
Let's see. Yeah.
I'll look it up while we talk.
Yeah, but that was the first real, like, villainous, tyrannical Superman, which was amazing. He had so much fun playing it. So I could totally see him coming back, and he loves playing the villain. The body swap episode where he swapped bodies with Lex was another fun episode, which, funny enough, Smallville went and did years later with Lionel Luthor and Clark, and Tom Welling just did an interview with Michael Rosenbaum, and that's the one episode he remembers from the show. And they did a 20th anniversary podcast, and he's like, "Yeah, I remember doing that episode, and it was so much fun."
It is fun when the actors get to change up. Red Son, the comic, was in
2003. Wow.
Yeah.
And Superboy was 1991, 92, so it was well before Superman Red Son. So
I feel like it was a very influential show to creators. I feel like the people that it got to experience the show got something out of it that they carried on with them. And it kind of became – like I say this all the time, like War of the Worlds is, you know, one of the greatest sci-fi things ever created. But the problem is now if you go back and read it or watch it or whatever, it feels bland because everybody's ripped it off.
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like, you know, with our conversation and stuff, like Superboy had all this great creativity and ideas and other people just mined from it.
Well, I think a big reason why Superboy had the way I like to describe it is Superboy embraced the Silver Age of the comics, the Kurt Swan era, the John Byrne, even though Superboy was kind of retconned in the mid-80s or late-80s with the John Byrne, that look of Superman they brought into the series. They had the writers who knew the heartbeat of the character, like Michael Carlin, Andy Helfer, Mark Jones. Trying to think who else? Fred Freiberger. Like all these guys who were in television or writing for DC. Cary Bates was another one. He was the showrunner that second season.
Did Marv Wolfman do a script?
I think Marv Wolfman did one. You had David Gerald, who wrote Star Trek, the original Star Trek, write for Superboy. He wrote the script The Test of Time, where Superboy is stuck, where time is stopped because of this Will-O-The-Wisp thing that Lana gets whisked up into. Like in that episode, in the Test of Time episode, and Clark is kind of like stuck in almost like it looked like a small, like Smallville, and everybody is stopped, and he's like, "What's going on?" Like it was very X-Files-y. It was so good. But I think the great thing about Superboy was it embraced the comics, it embraced the silliness of those 50s, 60s, 70s comics, and even the 80s. And wasn't afraid of blazing its own path and using some of the villains that we haven't seen on film properly, even till this day, like Bizarro, who was like at first very much like Frankenstein. He's a Frankenstein character. But Superboy did it in a way where, yeah, he's creepy, but then by the end of it, he's... Him and Superboy realize they need each other because they have nobody else. They're brothers. And I love that at the end of the two-part episode in season two where Bizarro puts his hand on Superboy's shoulder and goes, "Thank you, brother, for giving Bizarro life." Great, great, great character moments. Yeah. In 22 minutes, they were able to tell really good stories and really hit the heart of the Superman, Superboy character, as opposed to some other versions that we've had recently with Superman, you know? Like, they really understood what made the Superman character appealing for so long. I think up until that point, when Superboy came out, it was the 50th anniversary of the character. So, yeah, they yeah. really
it was,
hit home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It came out in 88, so yeah. I was going to say, you're talking about talent. I mean... One talent that definitely had a huge impact is you mentioned the Road to Hell episodes.
Mm-hmm.
They were directed by David Nutter, as many Superboy episodes actually ended up being.
Yeah.
You know, 21 episodes of Superboy were directed by David Nutter. Mm-hmm. David Nutter would go on to direct the pilot for Smallville, as well as a couple other episodes. Then would go on to direct the pilot for Supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
And then
X-Files,
the Flash.
Yep.
He
is basically the Steven Spielberg of television now.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. He is. You know, he is one of the few directors that have directed multiple versions of Superman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Having directed both Smallville and Superboy, and I think Glenn Winter is one of the others who directed mm-hmm. Smallville. And
Colin Chilvers, who was on, I think he was in the Superman production team. He got to direct some episodes of Superboy that first season. And it's funny because he directed the pilot episode of Superboy. And it's funny because I'm friends with him on Facebook, and I was posting some images from the pilot. And I just recently, a friend of mine who worked in the props department at Superboy had a bunch of boxes in his garage. So he was sending me these boxes. And in the boxes, we found a pair of Clark Kent glasses. And they were John Newton's glasses. So I posted a picture on my Instagram of the glasses. And I tagged John. And John's like, "Oh, my God. Like, those are amazing." He goes, "I remember." And John sent me this text. He goes, "I remember picking out those glasses in the pre-production meeting with Colin Chilvers." So I sent the message to Colin, and he's like, "Yeah, I remember picking the Clark Kent glasses with John." And it, like, it's just so cool, like, to have the access to these people who made your childhood, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so. I mean, now I wanted to ask you about this. The episode, technically, like, if you can shine some light on this, the pilot episode of Superboy was not actually aired as the first episode, was it?
No.
There was something that happened there where it was actually aired later. Wasn't it the real pilot? Wasn't the countdown to
– It was Countdown to Nowhere.
Yeah.
And they filmed it, or they used a different episode. They used, what was the episode? The episode with Lana's father coming. The Jewel of Tetchakal tested better than Countdown to Nowhere because of Lex Luthor and Michael Mano's work in that episode. So they're like, you know what? We're going to go with the Jewel of Tetchakal because it's more action-oriented. Superboy's doing more super stuff in it. And it's just testing better. So that's what they ended up using as the pilot, quote-unquote pilot episode of Superboy, which the first real episode of Superboy is Countdown to Nowhere, where the group of gangsters or mobsters or whatever break into Schuster University and steal this advanced laser weapon. And Lana, who's doing a picketing against this new advanced laser, is picketing against the use of it at Schuster. And she gets caught up in it, and these guys break into this advanced lab as Schuster football players, which is really funny. And Lana gets taken as collateral. So it was a really fun episode. And there was another version of Countdown to Nowhere, and it's up on YouTube, and they cut some scenes out of it where Clark is in the Schuster Herald, their version of the Daily Planet. Not the Daily Planet, but their college newspaper. Clark and TJ are working, and Lana comes bursting into the Schuster Herald going, "Is he here yet?" And it's the first interview that anybody has with Superboy. So Clark and TJ are going to interview and photograph Superboy for the Schuster Herald. And it's basically, it's framed as them remembering their first encounter with Superboy in Countdown to Nowhere. So there's three different versions, well, two different versions of Countdown to Nowhere. But they used the Jewel of Tetchakal because it had Lex Luthor in it, and it just set up the characters a little bit better than Countdown to Nowhere.
Wow. I didn't know why. I just remember, I just remember there being something that they had done to that, because it reminded me of like the whole Firefly thing. Right. They didn't air the pilot for the pilot. Uh-huh.
That's another great series. My God. Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, you know, a pilot usually is written as some way of an introduction to these characters.
Yeah. It's cool in a sense that it kind of hit the ground running that first season and was like, okay, you know who Superman is. And it kind of was like a soft spinoff of the Superman films, and it was the same production team and everything. So, like, I kind of like the idea that, you know what, you've seen the films, come to this, and it's the same unit that made you believe Christopher Reeve was Superman and made you believe that a man can fly. Well, come to this, and we're going to make you believe a boy can fly. So that was pretty cool.
So. Yeah. All right, Sam, I got a few questions here for you. We're gonna kind of change gears a little bit here and just do some kind of your whole, you know, we've talked about a lot, so I'm going to skip over some of these. But
shoot, Ty, go ahead.
If you had one power of a Kryptonian, what's the power you would take?
Oh, my God. That's a tough one.
It is tough because once you start thinking things through a little bit, you start to realize there's only one power that you can really have and probably manage.
Yeah. I mean, super strength would be awesome, but I would be afraid to, like, hug somebody or, like, if I'm on, like, a airplane or something, if I just got mad or something and hit like the tray table that like I puncture a hole in the airplane. Mm-hmm. So flight would be cool, but I have vertigo.
Where am I?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm afraid of heights with the vertigo thing. So I went to a Chicago Bulls game and I sat up all the way at the top and I'm looking down at the players going, oh my God, I can't do this. So flight would be no. Super speed would be pretty cool. I would go at super speed because then I wouldn't have to fly. I wouldn't have to get on a train, and I could be somewhere like the Flash or like Superman. And Superman is faster than the Flash in the blink of an eye. And I kind of like that. That'd be so cool.
You know, that's one thing I always liked, you know, is yes, Superman can fly. We can also run fast too. And I feel like once every version of Superman, they introduced flight, they kind of forget that he can actually move fast too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, and I mean, who wouldn't want to have X-ray vision? But I'm like, there's some things that you just shouldn't see.
Right.
Yeah, totally. No.
Like,
oh, God. And you can't unsee it.
Like, I was thinking about, like, microvision. Like, you walk into, like, a hospital and you could see all the germs.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Like, ugh. Yeah, no, I would freak out. I'd be like, I don't, yeah, no. So, yeah, when you actually think about it, it's like, yeah, no, I wouldn't want flight. I mean, super speed's the only one because traveling would be so easy. But, I mean, like, would your clothes tear apart like the Hulk, too? Would yep. I'd have to get heat-resistant like clothing. See,
that's why we, as we... You know, I've asked this question, we kind of whittle it down to the invulnerability.
Yeah.
Because the invulnerability helps play into the super flight, the super speed, you know, and all that. And the super strength. Like, it all kind of comes out. If I have the invulnerability.
Yeah.
Then, no, like, I don't have to worry about stuff as much, so.
Well, and different versions of the Superman character. Well, it's his aura that protects you. Oh, okay. That's interesting. I never thought of that. Okay.
Yeah.
I believe that.
I'm like, okay. You know, and. It's like always like the old Flash has the Speed Force that kind of protects him as he's running, you know. So it's like his clothes stay, and then, because that would be my part, like just oh Tyler, you sped over here. I can tell because you're wearing fire clothes. Oh yeah, my clothes are on fire.
You checked out like a firefighter as I'm like super speeding. Like, man, that fireman runs really fast. Like, what the hell?
It is funny because it's like, oh, can I have just one or do I need them all like to work?
Oh God, super breath or freeze breath would be cool.
Yes,
but
heat vision's my other favorite because there's so many times I tell my wife like, if I had heat vision right now,
right. To cook, yeah, to cook stuff would be really cool. But
melt the ice, trying to get like right. my. Now, yeah. Let me ask you this. For heat vision, as a fan, what do you think's better? Like, you know, like in Superman Returns, when we see the heat vision, and in Smallville, they kind of do this wave of, like, heat energy. And then, you know, there's the classic, like, laser eye look. Which do you prefer? Which do you think looks better and feels better as a personal choice?
I liked Smallville's version, like, with the heat waves because it's just more realistic and, like – But I mean, on the flip side, how you not love the red laser beams?
Right.
I mean, Superboy doing they were the first ones to introduce how Clark shaved in the morning. And if you go back and watch the episode A Day in the Double Life, where it was like Clark's day, like in that episode, because Mr. Jackson wants to know, what do you do with your day, Clark? Like, what do you really do? I'm going to give you this journal, and you tell me what you're doing and why you're always off, you know, on these, like, well, I got to go get index cards, Mr. Jackson. What? What are you talking about? Like, I want to know what you do at the end of the day, Clark, with your day here at the Bureau. And it was so cool because that was the first episode we saw Clark, like, do his shaving in the morning. And he holds up the piece of what is it? The mirror, and he shoots his heat vision into the mirror, and it's just he's shaving with his heat vision, which was really cool. And then ever since then, everybody's doing that bit. Like like Lois and Clark did it. I don't know if Smallville. I don't think Smallville did it.
No, because he never really had any facial hair.
He didn't have a beard.
I would definitely like to see it on Lois or on Superman and Lois.
Yeah.
Because do you remember when they had the whole marketing for Man of Steel? Like, yes. How does he shave?
Yeah.
And, like, you had different people, like, being interviewed, like, well, I think he does it this way, or, like.
Uh-huh. But there's only one way he does it. He shoots his heat vision into the mirror, and he just moves around, and there it's super clean. There you go.
Exactly. Smooth.
Super smooth. Right.
What would you say is your favorite Superman film? Now, it can be live action or animated.
Man, you are really putting me on the spot, Tyler.
Man, there's a lot more in here I could dig into.
But... Oh, my God. How do you not go with Superman the movie?
I feel like that's the default. So, like, for me, when I answered, I was like,
yeah.
I had to think, okay. Like, I feel like that's the duh. So, it's like the one that's after that.
It's the duh, but, like, I mean, it's the definitive version of the character. No offense to people that have grown up with Brandon Routh or Henry Cavill. And for me, Brandon Routh was the first Superman I saw on the silver screen. I didn't see any of the Superman. I didn't see Superman 1, 2, 3, or 4 on the big screen. So I would say I remember the teaser trailer for Superman Returns and just being so like, oh, my God, we're getting a Superman film. And we were waiting 17 years for a Superman film. And it was like start, restart, like, oh, you had J.J. Abrams. Then you – well, first you had Tim Burton and then J.J. and then Brett Ratner. And so like when Bryan Singer coming off of X-Men 2, like, oh, you know what? I'm not doing X-Men 3. I love Superman. This is going to be a Richard Donner like tribute in a way, but we're blazing a new path. And that first teaser trailer out of San Diego Comic-Con with – the voiceover of Marlon Brando saying and the mailbox and him arriving on Earth with the Kryptonian ship and him, you know, the silhouette of Brandon Routh's the spit curl of him looking up. It was just and then him flying from space down to, through the atmosphere was like, oh, wow, that's Superman. Like, I mean, I remember my anticipation. I remember being in college just checking every single day for every little nugget about that film was like, wow, I can't believe I'm going to see a new Superman film. And you had Kevin Spacey as Lex Luthor because I remember all the fan casting like, oh, Kevin Spacey's should be Lex Luthor. I remember them talking about him being in the Tim Burton production as Brainiac or Lex Luthor. So and even the JJ version, the flyby, well, we want Kevin Spacey as Lex Luthor. So he was always around the Superman projects in some form or fashion. So when that came to fruition, like, oh, man, and them casting Brandon Routh in an unknown in the vein of Christopher Reeve and them saying that this is the continuation of the Christopher Reeve Superman, I remember, like, just being over the moon. I remember the hype going into that movie. So I think if I had to pick my favorite Superman film, Superman's the movie, the default, but I really liked elements of Superman Returns, especially that shuttle sequence was amazing. Oh my God. I remember being at Navy Pier, Chicago on that giant screen. And when Superman lands the plane everybody cheered. Like that was quintessentially Superman. And you knew Superman was back after that. But yeah, I wish there was a little bit more action in Superman Returns. I love Brandon Routh. I loved his portrayal of the character. I just wish they would have gave him more to do as Superman and let him be his own Superman in that film. That was the only criticism I had about that movie.
I agree with you. You know, was the fact that they could have made it a love letter to Donner, but let him be his own Superman.
Yeah,
it always boggles my mind that Superman Returns was in 06 and Batman Begins was in 05, and they are completely like polar different approaches to these characters.
Yeah, it was funny because I remember with Green Lantern and Ryan Reynolds, that was like their first like attempt at doing a DC universe, and that Green Lantern was going to lead into all these different like Superman and Batman. Batman Begins, that was probably one of the most fun movies to go see, like especially after Batman and Robin and the crap. I know we're getting off on a tangent.
Oh, we're fine.
But I remember going again and taking my entire family to go see Batman Begins. And when Christian Bale's Batman is on the barge fighting those criminals, like – was just amazing. And then him like looking over the skyline of Chicago on the Wrigley Building. And I just remember it being like 10 o'clock at night and people just screaming at at the Navy Pier screen going, "That's freaking Batman. That's amazing." And people cheering. Like, I mean, there's nothing like going to a movie and just recently with Spider-Man No Way Home, people cheering yes. for their hero. Yes. Not once, not twice, but over the course of several times in a screening was like, there's nothing better than seeing your hero up on the screen or on television doing what they should be doing. And it's just so gratifying. And it's like, wow, that's why we love these heroes, you know?
You mentioned the trailer, you know, for, and I yeah. was thinking, I don't remember which movie it was because my brother and I went and did a double feature of seeing Walk the Line and Harry Potter 4 back to back. And it was in one of those showings, maybe both, I don't remember, that the trailer played for Superman Returns, the teaser before, of just that, like I said, the mailbox, the voiceover. Mm-hmm. And I just remember being so excited seeing that, that even though I was seeing this other movie that I wanted to, I left the theater. That's what was on my mind.
Oh, and the music, the John Williams music. Dun, 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 dun. And then he flies and you see the S and it's like, oh, wow. And it was just like they captured in that what minute and a half trailer yeah, was
it's
like
a, it's barely over a minute.
Wow. Like amazing. The only other trailer that made me feel that way was Star Trek 2009.
Yeah, the teaser.
Because the teaser and then the trailer that they had, I think it was the third trailer after, just was so well done. And like I'm not a big fan of recent Trek, but like that first movie, like they had a lot to do because they needed to resuscitate the Trek brand, and I thought they did a really nice job of it. And I love Chris Pine. He's a great actor. And I love that he did his little tribute to Shatner and the Kobayashi Maru scene.
Yes.
With the apple and him biting the apple, which was so funny. And him, just the way he's sitting in the chair in the Kobayashi Maru test was fantastic. Like, just enough of Shatner in there. But again, he got to do his own thing as Captain Kirk. And I just wish Brandon Routh in Superman Returns was able to do what Chris Pine was able to do in Star Trek 2009. Just a little bit of his own flavor as the character. Put his own stamp on Superman. So yeah, I would say Superman Returns was one of my favorite Superman, is my favorite Superman film, which is, you know, I have problems with it. But if you read the prequel comics leading up to that, I think you'd have a more appreciation for the film. That's how I look at it.
I can agree with that. That movie, for many of the exact same reasons that you stated, has a special part like in my heart. Mm-hmm. It just came at the right time in my life that I needed that movie in my yeah. life. Like my favorite belt buckle is the Superman Returns belt buckle, and I wore that thing until like it uh-huh. popped in the back, and it was just a great time with that film. Like I saw that film I think 4 times in theaters. I saw it when it was in the IMAX 3D. Mm-hmm. Where it would be just certain scenes are in 3D. So like you're watching it and like you said, the airplane rescue would start flashing, like put your glasses on, and yeah. put them on yeah. for that scene. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's not perfect. There's parts in it that I'm just like, there's yeah. parts in it where I'm like, you could have done more with his character. Like he could have got some more action because it is 2006 and you're bringing Superman to life.
Well, I think, and I've said this on other podcasts, I think when you're reintroducing Superman to an audience, it's very hard to have in the world of Twitter and Facebook and immediate gratification, having your audience go back and, hey, you know what? Can you go back and watch Superman 1 and Superman 2 that happened over 30 years ago? I think... Like, it's very hard to ask your audience to go do their homework when you're trying yeah. to introduce a new Superman, even if it is the Christopher Reeve Superman you're resuscitating or bringing back to life. I think that's where you lost – well, that's where I think Bryan Singer lost most of his audience. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you could probably do that now.
Yeah.
Because we are living in the age of, like, the legacy sequel. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was just a different time. And I think, like, because I remember a couple of my family and friends going, Superman has a kid? Like, what are you talking about? When Jason throws the piano across the room, they're like, when did this happen? Well, you didn't see Superman 2. So,
and
like...
And then it's like...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, because I remember, like, you know, the big thing being, well, this takes place after Superman 2. Mm-hmm. 3 and 4 don't count.
Right.
And you're kind of like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like... And then, because at the same time is when they released the Donner cut of Superman 2.
Yeah.
And just being like, oh, okay, so now they're really kind of throwing away continuity and what could be. And so, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Bryan Singer did, I like that he kept the Richard Donner aesthetic. I like that he kept the heart of Superman. You know, I have a little bit of gripes with the costume in that film. But, I mean, I wish the cape was different because it looks like a shower curtain on his neck, you know?
The cape and the high collar are the two that I don't like the most.
I didn't have a problem with the raised S. I didn't have a problem with the trunks. I just felt like they used the S too many times. It felt redundant on the chest and on the belt and on the soles of his shoes. I mean, they had S's all over the place. But
and then not on the back of his cape.
Yeah, I miss...
you put it everywhere, but not on the back of the cape.
I still say the best-looking costume, and I own a bunch of them, so I'm partial. The best-looking costume was the Superboy costume from seasons 3 and 4. Like, it's the most accurate. It is the most comic book, like, accurate costume to date, and I will probably never see a costume like that ever again. I mean, other than Brandon Routh's Kingdom Come costume from Crisis, those two are the most accurate in the, what, how many years has Superman been on film and television? And, like, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Even Tyler Hoechlin's Golden Age costume, it took how many years to finally get that costume in live action? So oh,
that was such a great scene.
Oh yeah, it's amazing. That show is so amazing. And
what I love about that show is I feel like they sat down and they're like, okay, what do we like about every version of this character? And then they like worked on crafting like a greatest hits version. Like from imagery, parts, and just beats, they're like, from every version of this character, what worked and what didn't.
And
we're
gonna
incorporate that into what we're doing.
Oh yeah. I mean, Todd Helbing and his production team, it doesn't even look like a CW show.
Nope.
I remember that those first 5 minutes sitting down and watching and going, wow. And I sent that to Gerard. I sent that to Stacey. I'm like, you guys got to watch this. This is amazing. And it was just like you said, it was like all the best, the 80 years history of Superman was like distilled through a crucible and was like, hey, you know what? This is what makes Superman, Superman. You either like it or you don't, you know? The aesthetic is very Man of Steel, very Zack Snyder. I don't have a problem with that. I think where most writers and directors fault or fail with Superman, and I've said this thousands and thousands of times, and I'm sure you have said this, Tyler,
probably,
is that Superman, you can't make like Batman. He's not dark. He's not brooding. He is the light in the darkness. He is the beacon of hope. And the problem I had with Zack Snyder's, and again, I'm not being hateful of people or fans who love Henry Cavill as Superman. I like him too. I just feel like he's not utilized in the proper way as the character. Zack Snyder is a great director. Visually, he has a great eye, but he doesn't understand Superman. And I remember interviews of him doing Watchmen saying, I would never touch Superman with a 10-foot pole because he is the granddaddy of superheroes and I don't think I could do him justice. But the problem with his Superman is they talk about it in Man of Steel. You are the beacon of light. You are the savior of the human race. You could save them if you want to, Cal. But we never really got to see it.
It was all like off camera.
Yeah, and the great, this is the perfect metaphor for Henry Cavill's Superman, is the woman in the flood reaching out to Superman and him hovering 10 feet or whatever you want to say above the house, and her reaching out for Superman and him just being an arm length away. That is how I would like to describe Henry Cavill's Superman. Just out of reach, he likes humanity. I shouldn't even say likes humanity, but he questions humanity. And, like, I mean, he said it in Man of Steel. Like, I can't trust Zod, but I can't trust the human race either. And it was always that seed of doubt with his version of Superman. Like, is this what I should be doing? Am I following Russell Crowe's Jor-El? Like, his wish fulfillment, like I don't know what I should be doing. Or even the dialogue in Man of Steel with Jonathan Kent, with Kevin Costner, who was perfectly cast, but that stupid line of dialogue of him going, maybe you shouldn't save him, Clark, was like, what are you talking about? So, I mean, I look at Man of Steel. It's not a bad film. I love two-thirds of that movie. I look at that film as the sci-fi version of a Superman story, or like, I love what David Goyer has said about Man of Steel. If you approach Man of Steel as like the day the earth stood still, especially the scene where he's in the desert with Lois and the army and the Kryptonian ship is coming, and it was really like out of the day the earth stood still. Yeah. And Feyora is coming down the walkway of the ship. That was amazing. I love the sci-fi aspect of Man of Steel. And the different elements that they set up that they never really got to pay off. I love the idea of the Codex. And yeah, that
you're very correct, yes. They didn't get to pay off.
And they didn't get to pay it off, because I know like some of the ideas was that Brainiac was going to come in Man of Steel, and that he was going to use the Codex to resuscitate or regrow Krypton. But in the midst of doing that, was going to create Bizarro. That would have been amazing. That would have been really cool to see. So, yeah, I mean, but, you know, Zack Snyder had to get his Batman in. He loves Batman. Oh, he loves Batman. So,
yeah, I agree. Like, you don't approach the characters the same way, because they're not the same person. Right. They're not the same character. Like,
right.
They have completely different outlooks on things. And, and I always said, like, to my wife, like, if I was filming a Superman movie, I always thought it'd be kind of neat to make the costume ridiculously bright, and then you film everything with like a darker grain filter, and the idea would be that the world is dark, but then, you know, even with the costume so bright that even with the dark filter, it's still bright to make him stand out even more, as if he's bringing the light, and then throughout the film, mm-hmm. you kind of show things get brighter.
Yeah.
And the idea, you know, just from the visual is, like, you know, the world is dark, but then you have this dude walking, standing tall in this bright suit, mm-hmm. who's not afraid to stand out, to call attention to.
Yeah. I love the whole Kill Bill, the Quentin Tarantino monologue that they did in Kill Bill Volume 1 about the difference between Clark Kent and Superman. Clark Kent is Kal-El's way of how he sees humanity and him trying to fit in. That's his idea of what humanity is and how he chooses to walk among us. But as Superman, he is the beacon. He is what we all aspire to be, which is the Superman. Like, so I love that. If you haven't, go check that out. There's a clip up on YouTube.
There's gotta be a clip
it's
on YouTube.
So good. Like, There's another filmmaker I would love to see his version of Superman, Quentin Tarantino. I'm going to ask myself a question. If I had a choice of a director for Superman, it would be Matthew Vaughn. I would love to see what Matthew Vaughn can do with Superman.
Dude. So years ago.
I just interviewed myself. Sorry, Tyler.
I love it. No, I love it because I did my pitch years ago on this podcast of what Man of Steel 2 would be, right? And it was, I think it was before Justice League. And we were pitching, like, what would we do for Man of Steel 2? And it was one of the things was, like, if you didn't have, like, Zack Snyder or whatever. I said Matthew Vaughn was my pick. And the villain was Brainiac, played by Javier Bardem. And I always, because I've always loved Matthew Vaughn's aesthetic. The other choice I had was, I think this person deserves another shot at something live action, is, Brad Bird.
Oh, yeah.
You know who did the From Iron the Giant? He did The Incredibles, the Iron Giant.
I love
Giant.
The Incredibles, yeah.
And then he did Ghost Protocol for Mission Impossible.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. Wow.
And, you know, and then he did Tomorrowland, which tanked. Yeah. And he hasn't done live action since. And I said, I think he has a sensibility that would be great for Superman. And he was my second choice as director.
Two really solid picks. I didn't even – I love The Incredibles. I didn't think The Incredibles 2 was as good as the first one, but
– It wasn't.
But I love that first Incredibles movie. I mean, there's parts of the second one I really like too, but like, yeah, Brad Bird would be perfect. I love Matthew Vaughn because of what he did with the X-Men in First Class.
First Class is my favorite X-Men movie.
It is such an underrated X-Men film. I love Kevin Bacon in that movie as the villain. He was fantastic. I like James McAvoy as Professor X and Michael Fassbender. What he had to do with X-Men First Class and having to recast the X-Men, I think was – he did a phenomenal job. So
he did a phenomenal job to the movie that they didn't because that was, you know, at the time of the MCU that they didn't really promote it. There was nothing really for that movie, and it just kind of like was – disappeared, you know?
Yeah.
And the cast resurfaced in the Bryan Singer Days of Future Past, you know, mashup film. But I love what Matthew Vaughn's done with Kingsman because if you ever – if you read the Kingsman Secret Service comic book by Mark Miller, it's so bare bones. Uh-huh. And Matthew Vaughn really took that, elevated the material, and has made that into his own thing. Like I haven't got a chance to go see the new one, The King's Man.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet either.
But I, you know, the other night, my wife showed the kid Stardust, which was Matthew Vaughn, his second movie. And yeah, I think he's a really talented filmmaker with a great aesthetic that he brings.
And I feel like he understands the Superman character. He understands the heartbeat of the character as opposed to let's make him, you know, dour and mopey and saying to Lois, nobody stays good in this world. Like, come on, that's not Superman. I love Henry Cavill. Don't get me wrong. It's just he has not had scripts written by people. I mean, David Goyer's hit or miss, but like,
yes,
he doesn't have a script writer or a director that understands the heartbeat of the character. And that's it. And I'll stay by that. If he had Todd Helbing and that production team from Superman and Lois behind him, my God, I think Superman would still be on the silver screen right now flying around.
Yes.
So.
I mean, Superman's one of those characters that if you're going to try to do a take, and I always hate that when people say, well, this is our take on the character. My first thought is, what are you changing? Because if you're doing a take, it usually means you're going to have to change things or rearrange or – Right. Manipulate. I mean, Smallville was he's not Superman yet. We're not doing Superboy. This is his growth. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Superman and Lois says, hey, this is him later on in life.
Yeah.
At a point where we've never seen him. Like he's had these battles with Lex. He has this history. Mm-hmm. But now he's a dad and this is where he's going this way. So that is a take in the sense of we're moving the character forward.
Well, I think with Superman Returns and even Man of Steel, it's like they treaded over water that we've already been down, or we've seen the origin so many times. We've seen this, and this, and it's like okay, it's like Batman.
Right.
We've seen the Waynes get killed how many different times through Gotham, Batman Begins,
the Joker. Why do we need that in that movie?
Batman versus Superman. We saw it again, and it's like okay, we get it. And I'm sure we'll see it in the Batman come this March.
I wonder though. Yeah. I wonder to myself, like, if they do that, or if it's just like talked about. Because I'm wondering if Matt Reeves has been like, you know, I hear people complaining that they've seen this Wayne murder too much. You know, we might just kind of move away from that and just kind of reference it.
Yeah, and I just feel like if. Like with a new Superman film, you don't have to do all that. Like, you know what? Let's just hit the ground running. Let's just like we'll shoot. And that's what I love about Superman and Lois. It is treading new water. We're blazing a new path. 80 years of the character, either in the comics or on film or on television, they are distilling through a crucible. They're picking and choosing, but they're not telling you outright, oh, you know what? When Superboy created Bizarro at the Schuster University Labs, that never happened. Mm-hmm. It still could happen.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So that's what I love about Superman and Lois. They're not pigeonholing themselves into a corner, but they're embracing, much like Superboy, the Adventures of Superboy did, like the entire comic book universe. They're not saying, well, you know what? We're not taking Mixus Pidalic and developing an episode with him because that character is just too campy and it doesn't make any sense because we want to tell the college years of Superboy and he didn't meet Mixus Pidalic until he was Superman. You know what? Forget that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Michael J. Pollyard, God rest his soul. You know, we just lost him a couple years ago. I met him at a convention with his agent, and I went up to him, and I had a picture from Hollywood Book and Posters. And Michael grew up here in Chicago, and he says to me, he's like, Sam, how do you remember this show? So, and like, I remember his agent looking at me and looking, because I had a DC Direct Mixus Pidalic statue, one of these little mini statues, nice, with me, and I had the photo, and they loved it. They're like, can we get more of these statues? I'm like, no. Like, there's just the one here. But I'm sure if you walked around the convention, you probably could find one. But Hollywood Book and Posters was at that convention in Anaheim back in 2010. And they got a bunch of copies, and they sold all those photos. Sorry, I'm going back to Superboy. Full circle. But
no, you're right, because it's about the way you take the story for what it is. Like, you know, I was gonna say, like, I always thought if they were like, Tyler, mm-hmm, we're gonna do Superman, we're gonna do the movie, where would you do? I would completely skip Krypton. My first Superman movie would be more about grounding, like the Smallville into Metropolis, and then my second film would mm-hmm. be kind of like. My second film would open with the flashback of Krypton. So like he is kind of like, as the audience, we're discovering Krypton as he does, instead of having this huge like Krypton scene and then going into it. It's like, you're kind of, you know, in sort of the way that Smallville kind of started with his crash and then moved forward. And then, you know, Lois and Clark, like, kind of move forward. I always thought that'd be kind of interesting to see this journey of mm-hmm. the character on film of having not, the Krypton past, but
yeah,
my dogs are barking.
Krypton. Oh, that's okay.
Oh, the doorbell's being rung.
It's okay, Ty.
I know who it is.
Oh, okay.
$5 says it's the little girl next door trying to see if the kids want to come out and play, but they're not because they got to clean their room.
The great thing is you could edit.
Yeah, exactly. Or just leave it in because that's the craziness.
It's fine.
Of
yeah, that's fine.
But the character, you know, has been around so long, and there are so many different ways to approach it. And the last thing I was going to say to you, mm-hmm. did you watch the newest episode of Superman and Lois?
You know what? I bought the season pass on iTunes. I buy the season passes on iTunes because I love watching the episodes without the commercial breaks.
Me too. That's what I do. We do – well, now the kids are in school, but when they weren't in school, we would do Wednesday morning breakfast. Mm-hmm. Where I'd make breakfast, we'd all sit and eat breakfast and watch the episode as a family. The reason why I asked, this isn't a spoiler, it's something to keep your eye on.
Yeah.
There's a scene where the camera passes in Smallville and there's a vendor selling Superman like merch.
Yeah.
If you look on the side of the table, it looks like it's up against a fence, is a red cape with a yellow S on the back.
Oh, wow.
And I pointed that out. I actually just put the picture because I snapped my computer screen up and I put it on the Facebook because I'm saying – I pointed out like, okay, this is something because, you know, in my headcanon right now is Krypton the series is a prequel to this.
Yeah.
That's my headcanon. And someone posted, well, he doesn't have the right cape. I'm like, not yet. Mm-hmm. But they can always get a new cape in a new season.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And – someone pointed out on social media today saying, what if that is an allusion to that's the cape that John Henry might get in Dawn?
Interesting.
And I'm like, cool. But I'm like, just the fact that it's there mm-hmm. is an interesting thought of where this could go.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to put a plug in it here, Sam, because the –
okay, yeah.
The dogs are going crazy and we've been going for a little while. And I think we could probably talk forever.
Well, and I think my dogs have been well behaved. They've been so quiet. They're asleep right now, so this is great.
The doorbell has awoken.
That's okay.
And well, Scooby.
Well, I just want to say, Tyler, thank you for having me on the Krypton Report. It's been so much fun. Like you said, we could talk for hours. This is amazing.
Thank you, Sam. Like, you bring such a great knowledge of, like I say, a part of my super fandom that I know little about. Mm-hmm. So it's exciting for me to hear all this about Superboy and the fact that I'm even more limited on what I get to watch because it's not on DC Universe because DC Universe is not around and it's not on HBO. I was going to say, Sam, just go ahead and plug all your social media, where they can find your podcast and your YouTube and all that fun.
Yeah, if you just go on YouTube at youtube.com/Superboy Legacy, the entire channel, podcast episodes, live streams are up there. We're kind of taking a break right now from recording. I have some commentary stuff that we did a couple months back with Michael Mano. That's going to go up this week. Shout out to my co-host, Tom Gallagher, David Arroyo, and Chris Jacobson. Like, those guys are amazing. Aaron Price, who does my graphics, and John Fent, those guys are amazing. Go check out their Instagrams and YouTube channels. They're so good. Tyler, again, thank you for having me on. For anything Superboy Legacy, go to superboylegacy.com. You will not miss anything. We have a ton of stuff coming up. New episodes are coming. I'm lining up interviews with Julia Pastore, Gerard Christopher's finally coming on, Stacey Hajduk. Like, season two is coming. We're going to scale down the live streams every once in a while, and our interviews are going to be pre-recorded, and we are going to do a really – we're just going to go completely out on the interviews, adding graphics, adding little tidbits and all this stuff to make those episodes really pop for the Superboy community and Superboy fans. So I can't wait to start season two. We're going to start that very, very soon. So just stick with us on superboylegacy.com. And Tyler, again, thank you for having me on the Krypton Report. Again, I could talk for hours. So thank you.
You're welcome. It's our pleasure. We're glad to have you and talk about this. And I look forward to season two of your podcast. Probably just as much as anybody else who listens to it.
And Ty, thank you for the years of support and, sending me like great messages. I remember when I was at the Superman celebration in the summertime and you just messaging me going, Sam, like this weekend, like it's so awesome to see you up there.
Yeah.
And, I'm just like everybody else. I'm so grateful over the support from the fans and even the cast and the crew of Superboy, and just being somebody that gets to keep this Superboy train going because I love the show, and to bring new fans to the party, it's just amazing. So thank you, everybody.
Look up in the sky.
Do you like movies? Of course you do. Do you like comic book movies? Of course you do. Well, our Patreon is launched now. It's $1 a month. That's all we ask. $1 a month to hear great content. And right now, one of the biggest things we're doing on our Patreon is movie commentaries. I am a movie person, and I love to talk about movies. So what we're doing is at least 2 movie commentaries a month. You'll hear the wonderful voice of my wife, Jania, more often. And other special shows. Check out our Patreon at KryptonReport.com/Patreon. And all we ask is, hey, $1, it helps us keep the show going. We're not looking to get rich. We just help with the cost of doing this, and it helps a friend out. You loan a friend $1, you probably have $1 lying around the house in change. So check out Patreon.com/KryptonReport. Sign up for the $1 a month and send us a message. You can be on the podcast. We can talk about something, anything you want to talk about. You can join us for a movie commentary if you want. So check it out.
And if you want to have a good time, keep listening to the Krypton Report.
If you're enjoying this podcast, here's some of our favorite podcasts to check out. Digging for Kryptonite, The Aspiring Kryptonian, Superman the Animated Podcast, The Last Sons of Krypton, The Geek of Steel, The All-Star Super Fan Podcast, It All Comes Back to Superman, and Superboy Legacy, Supergirl Radio, and of course, Always Hold On to Smallville. Check all those out, enjoy those supercasts, and remember, keep listening.
The Krypton Report is a Tears production.
We thank you for listening and enjoying, and please support us on our Patreon account, our T Public store, and check out our social media. Always remember to look up in the sky.